Support for the Closing Market Report podcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 23rd day of August 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Ben Pruce from the Andersons at their Everly, Iowa facility will be here to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Climatologist Office right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of U of I. And we'll take up next week's Farm Progress Show, give you some previews of what we'll be doing on stage. Orion Samuelson will be there at 10:30 in the morning, and I'll be live from the show at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week. And we'll talk more about that as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Let's check the numbers on a Friday afternoon from the CME Group in Chicago, where the corn, the soybeans, and the wheat all finished higher. September contract for the soft red at 635.5 was up 4 cents. December there at 646 in Chicago, 5.5 higher. And the March wheat at 658, up 5.75. The hard red finished in Kansas City, the September at $6.95.5, a penny and a quarter higher. From the corn pit back in Chicago, September futures 8 cents higher, $4.95.5, the settlement price for Friday afternoon. December at 4.70, up 5.5 cents, and the March at $4.82.25, five and a quarter higher. May futures 4.90.25, up 5.25. And July corn at $4.95.75, a nickel higher. December futures up 5 cents as well. They finished at $5.04.75. Again, that's up 5 cents for December 2014 in the corn pit. From the soybeans now, September contract, $13.65.25, 43.25 higher. November beans at $13.28, up 41.25 cents. And January at $13.28.5, 40 cents higher. The March at $13.05, up 36, and the May at $12.75, 31.25 higher. November beans $12.45, up 20.25 cents. Bean meal futures $19.90 higher. Bean oil up 21 cents. Live cattle futures finished the October at $126.70, down 50 cents. December 50 lower as well, $129.22.5 the settlement price. September feeders at $156.65 were a dollar and a nickel lower. October at $158.85 down $1.15. And December lean hogs, $82.25, 65 cents higher. October or the nearby at $85.10, up 70. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, nearby contract, $106.35 a barrel, $1.32 higher. RBOB gasoline for the September at $3.04. That's 3.9 cents higher for the wholesale price. Ethanol trading at $2.43.6, up 13.5 cents, and the spread between the two has narrowed down 9.5 cents in the last day to 56.8 cents. Natural gas at $3.48.2 is down 6.3 cents for the day, and diesel fuel at $3.09.4 a gallon, up 2.5 cents. Gold futures at $1,395, settled $24.50 higher, and the U.S. dollar at 81.36 finished or is currently trading down 0.129 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. As it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, sunny skies, a high of 84 degrees, should be beautiful. East-northeast winds at about 8 miles an hour for the afternoon. And this evening, mostly clear, a low of 58, east-northeast winds at 5 to 7. Saturday, sunny skies and 83. Saturday night, mostly clear and 62. Sunday, sunny skies and 87. 7 degrees Sunday night, partly cloudy and 68, and on Monday, mostly sunny and a high near 91. Monday night, partly cloudy and a low of 71. Tuesday, sunny skies and 92 degrees, and Tuesday evening, partly cloudy next week as we make our way into the first evening of the Farm Progress Show. Of course, it's not open at night, but 73 degrees. Wednesday, mostly sunny and hot, a high of 95. and mostly clear on Wednesday night and 71 degrees. On Thursday, sunny skies and 93. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour when we talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's the 23rd day of August. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us from Atchison, Kansas, is Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Mike. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
How are you today, Todd?
I am really well, and I'm looking forward to the Farm Progress Show, but I hadn't read a forecast until just about a minute and a half ago.
I was going to ask, are you getting your case of Powerade bought today?
Yeah, you and I are going to be out there looking really stunning, I think.
Well, I told you a long time ago during the winter meetings that I wanted to lose about 7 pounds. I just didn't want to do it in 36 hours.
Yeah, it might be a tough slog, but we will be there. Actually, you'll be in our tent on and off in the 10:30 time frame and the 2 o'clock time frame, depending on the day. And then you've got over at Wiffles. You'll be on stage over there putting on some events, too. Tell me about those, please.
Got a couple events scheduled. Got the Central and 4th is where they're going to be. Where are you going to be at U of I? Do you know, Todd?
Oh, I do know. I should have told you that. 3rd and West.
3rd and West. Okay, great. Well, we're going to be at Central and 4th with Tim Reinhardt and Wiffles. And Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be doing 3 shows a day, 9, 11, and 1, talking about 2014 corn demand. And going to be extremely good, I think, because we just got news today that Japan was going to step in for 2.2 million tons of feed corn, looking for October through December shipment and or delivery, excuse me, and that the U.S. would probably get most of that business. So we saw a lot more demand movement again this week, and I think it'll be a neat presentation. It'll be very short and to the point, and be right out there in the front so that people can get up and head out and go get a drink of water.
Yeah, they're going to need to do that. So 2nd and Central, right?
That's not Central and 4th.
No, Central and 4th, which is really close to where we are. 3rd and West, they're only a block apart, really, by Caddy Corner, that is. So not too far apart. We're just, if you're looking for the U of I tent and you come in the main gate, if you just hang a right as you come in the main gate, we're about 3 blocks south. If you go 1 block north to or 1 block to the east towards Central Avenue and then turn 4 blocks to the south, you'll find the Wiffles tent. And what time's again for you there?
9, 11, and 1, all local time. They're Central time.
All right. Congratulations on that one. I'll look forward to seeing you here in the great state of Illinois making your trip back over. You know, I was going to ask you, how far is it from Lafayette to Atchison, Kansas?
Right at 9 hours. And if you are going to make the trip, do not take 70. Take 72 across to 36. It's a much more pleasurable drive, less traffic. It's a beautiful drive. I drove recently to Belleville from Atchison. I went through Kansas City and St. Louis, and it was a completely different, much more miserable drive along 70. So don't do yourself the harm of driving the southern route.
Oh, you should have asked me about that. I know better than now. You know, ever since they made that 4-lane across the top of Missouri on 36, that's a gorgeous drive across there. That's a really nice drive across the top of there. You've driven it a couple of times. The guys from Pro Farmer were out in that part of the world just a tad in Missouri this week. And then today they released the numbers from Iowa and Minnesota. And the corn numbers were a whole lot bigger than many people expected they were. But the soybean numbers, the pod counts were really down in both those states.
Yeah, and here's the kicker. We just got the final numbers that would be drilled into the national numbers with USDA. And 6 of the 7 states that they went through, the final yield for corn was lower compared with the tour number. They came out with not only a 154.1 yield, so lower yield than USDA, and that's an average. They go 152 to 155.6 with a tolerance of 1%. So 154.1, and they cut harvested acres 1.8 million. so then not only did they take the yield down, they also took harvested acres down. And I think when I talked to Chicago after these numbers came out, I think that most people were trending in the idea after the tour numbers, the day-to-day tour numbers came out, that the trade was expecting probably something close to, if not over, a 160 yield number. So I think a much bigger shock in the corn in the final number that was released just about 45 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Now, beans probably a little bit more normal compared to what the actual tour data showed. Disappointing, 41.8 bushels, plus or minus 2%, and they took 800,000 acres off the harvested for beans. So when you translate that into the USDA numbers, you're talking about essentially 300 million off of carryover in corn, so 1.5 on corn carryover, 97 million bushels off bean carryover, taking you down below 125. So both of them very friendly, but I think the yield number a bit more friendly for the corn given what the tour day-to-day numbers were suggesting.
Yeah, so and Chip did remind folks that the crop is awfully immature and says that even with these numbers, he plans to reevaluate the tour numbers every week for a while at least. So it'll be interesting to see what they have to say about the crop and the size. And I suppose the heat might help out some, but it won't help without the rain. That's for darn sure.
I would say that in some areas it'll be just the opposite of the heat with the immaturity of the corn. Some of those ears were pencil. They weren't even in blister. I think that if you get 100 degrees in Cedar Rapids and Denison and Des Moines, unless you got a rain recently, if you're looking like you haven't had more than a half an inch in the last 30 days, I would think 100 degrees would be hurting your corn crop quite a bit. But one of the interesting anecdotal things about the tour itself is when they published the Minnesota number for the day at 181 at the end of the day, that was huge compared to USDA's 166. And I went back and looked at it, and they had, ProFarmer had the Minnesota yield better than it was in 2010, and that's when the good to excellent ratings were at 90% for Minnesota in mid-August of 2010. So it just goes to show you, I think, and I think Chip's done a really good job of trying to say this and suggest this over and over again, don't take the day-to-day stuff too seriously. Yeah, look at it, but wait till the Friday numbers come out.
Oh, yeah, he's told us that on Commodity Week because we always have him on after the tour, and he'll be on today. We'll record at 4:30. He's told us every time.
Every time
now.
But the trade, you notice, went back to trading those day-to-day numbers, I thought anyway, and we went back to buying beans and selling corn in the second half of the week, and I think it was because they started to track those day-to-day numbers again.
Okay, so let's deal with a number here from ProFarmer. So you gave us the number. The production number ranges from what, 13.325 to 13.595.
Correct.
So that 13.3 crop starts to get down there fairly small and brings us down to a 1.3 carryout or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
You get down close to 1.25, and you have to throw on top of that, we're running very tight on global coarse grain. You know, that's where something that we've kind of put and shelved in the closet here the last 3 months is that we really are super tight historically on global coarse grain ending stocks. So
okay,
that becomes a big factor.
So you like these numbers because you've been of this opinion.
I really do because they're closer to what I think is actually out there, and the crop's not made yet. I think we went back into that 2009 tunnel vision, and we just can't be there yet. The crop's not made.
All right. So what do you do? Just stay the course where you are?
You stay with paper. You just don't sell the cash because, you know, look at beans. I mean, they're a perfect example. If we're down below 125 million bushel carryover, you are back into a 2012 type market, Todd, where you've got to ration demand, and that means how high and how fast do you go before you choke that demand off. And so you not only have to deal with what could not be in the combine hopper, but you also have to deal with what could not be on your bottom line if you sell too early. So stick with known cost paper positions for this next 10 days, and let's see if we really do hit the century mark out in the Western Corn Belt next week.
Why did the beans rally?
I think it goes back to that ratio, and I think it goes back to the trade simply thinks the corn crop is more made, and this heat is actually beneficial because it'll dry the crop down, it'll have less frost threat. The beans have none of that going for them in terms of bearish attitude.
Cattle and feed report was out this afternoon. Did you see those numbers?
Yes, very friendly. 12th straight month of declines, 94% on feed below the trade guess. Placements 90% below the trade guess, marketing's 105 on the top end of the trade guess. Between this and the cold storage report yesterday, I think your cattle market and your beef market are headed higher over the longer term.
Okay, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd. See you next week, buddy. Hey,
yep, we'll see you on the Farm Progress Show site. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report, as usual, for a Friday afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, coming up next, In My Backyard's Lisa Braltz and Joan Jack talk about an urban do-it-yourself culture that's becoming something of a trend among some women.
Little known fact. If I hadn't stayed home with my children for a few years in the late 90s and early 2000s, In My Backyard probably wouldn't exist. During those 7 years I stayed home with my kids, Cody and Lily, I taught myself and, more importantly, learned from others how to grow food and how to cook and preserve what I grew. I learned how to knit. We kept chickens. I hung laundry on a clothesline and I wished I could keep bees. I felt like I was really connecting with something, and I was. Since rejoining the workforce in 2005, I've worked for organizations where food, empowerment, and local economies and talking about those things to anyone who would listen were major aspects of my jobs. But my interest in home economies, the most local economies of all, has stayed constant. If there's been a book or an article on the subject published in the last 10 years, I've read it. Enter a book called Homeward Bound, Why Women Are Embracing the New Domesticity. Published late this past spring, Homeward Bound investigated the continuing rise of DIY, do-it-yourself, culture in the new millennium, particularly among young, educated women. The author, a woman in her early 30s named Emily Matcher, seemed both baffled and intrigued by the concept. Why, she wondered, are so many educated young women deciding against staying out of the full-time workforce, choosing instead to grow and preserve food, bake their own bread, make their own laundry soap, and sometimes choosing to educate the children they have at home? Is it a good idea? Is it a major setback? Are they telling the truth about their lives at home, or are they glossing them over? I decided it was time to take the book to someone in Matcher's target demographic and get their take on the subject.
So it's really cool because today I just found out that I will be on the Master Gardeners walk next year. They just gave me the go-ahead. So I got chosen out of a bunch of gardens that they looked at because they wanted a garden that had the vegetables and the flowers in it. So I'm pretty psyched about that.
Joan Jack is in her mid-30s with two graduate degrees, one in geology and the other in teaching. She's married to her partner, Jason, and they have a 4-year-old daughter, Abby. They live on a quiet street in Champaign, Illinois, in a mid-sized older house that looks like most others from the street. But the backyard is something else altogether. It's full of raised beds loaded with vegetables. There are fruit trees, berry bushes, beehives, and flowers, all of which she grows for her family, for the farmer's market, and for a CSA she started herself. Something is always in progress in her backyard, and today it's flower drying.
So I picked these this morning. These are calendula or pot marigold, and they're edible flowers. And what I want to do is, I have some inside I can show you when we go in. I'm soaking them in jojoba oil. Some of them in vodka and some of them in apple cider vinegar after you dry them. And you can use them to make beauty products or tea, anything. Yeah, stuff like that.
She's not working full-time outside the home, but growing things isn't all Joan does. She doesn't stay down on the urban farm. She'll be teaching two sections of geology next spring, as she's done before, and it's hard work of an entirely different kind. The biggest problem she had with Homeward Bound, she says, is that women and families in what she calls the middle seem to be left out.
Yep, and she doesn't really talk about that middle very much, where it is some, there's give and take, where, yeah, you may be supported by, financially by the spouse, but it's also, they have other income. And, you know, it's not just the mom or the dad just staying at home all the time, where you have outside jobs and, yeah, she doesn't talk about that, not that I can remember.
For Joan, examples of people who are out in the world, enjoying what it has to offer, but who are still asking big questions about the nature of work, the concept of agency and self-education, and how what we do affects the health of ourselves and our planet, aren't given much time in Homeward Bound. And she thinks they should be because those are the people who are most relatable.
Right, exactly. Right, no way, dude. No, like, we do it step by... Yeah, I live in the world, and that is why I love it. I love being able to go out... I've made my own laundry soap. I haven't made my own soap, but I made my own laundry soap. I've canned all kinds of things, but it's like, you know what? I love being able to go out and be like, I can buy this if I need to. I can't buy a lot because we don't have a lot of money, but it's like, yeah, I can do that.
She acknowledges her privilege. She has a supportive partner in Jason, and they figured out how to live well, by their standards, on his income and the income she brings in from classes she teaches, the CSA, and her sales at the farmer's market. But for her, it's less about making a living and more about making a life, asking questions and developing relationships to people, to the food we eat, and to the world we live in.
I think that's the whole point. You have to spread the message about what you're doing and why you think it's important.
For In My Backyard, I'm Lisa Braltz.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana. Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. Ben Pruce at the Anderson's Everly, Iowa facility is now on the phone line to take a look at the cash grain market. Ben, thanks so much for taking the time. I got to know what farmers thought in your area about the pro-farmer numbers that were released for both Minnesota and Iowa.
Most guys, some are pretty skeptical. They've been skeptical of the crop all year, but... You know, they're always skeptical, but the yields always seem to do a little better than anticipated. But on our beans, we know we've been short the bean numbers. Like here today, we really don't feel like we have much of a bean crop at all. So by the numbers they found pod count, we weren't real surprised. Those numbers escaped me off the top of my head, but
they were low.
yep, they were shorter, and that was no surprise. And the corn, everybody just kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, well, that could be.
Last week you told us you'd have to have rainfall. I think you got some. Is that right or not?
Yes, we've actually gotten two shots of rain here, which is almost unheard of here the last couple of years. And actually just last night or two nights ago at south of Everly here, we almost got 2 inches of rain. So.
Oh, that that'll make a corn crop.
That might make
a bean crop.
yeah. Our beans have felt short here all year, and I'm not saying it's the end of the world on the bean crop, but it's just with how our supply and demand situation sitting, we don't have any room for error or short production nationally. And, boy, it just doesn't feel like we have a whole lot of beans that are even out in the field now.
So you got 2 inches two nights in a go, and you said you got another shot. Did you get very much the second time around?
We got about, in our neck of the woods, we got right about 6/10. So, just enough. And like I say, we have heavy enough ground out this way that, we can get by, but these shots of rain are life-saving for us.
And your bids for the day very quickly.
625 cash corn and 1428 cash beans.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ben Pruce from the Andersons.
Support for WILL comes from Bates Commodities, AgriGold, the Andersons, Wisconsin Plastic Drain and Tile, Strategic Farm Marketing, and Farm Credit Services. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.
It's National Sponge Cake Day. The earliest recorded sponge cake recipes appeared in the 1615 book, The English Huswife, containing the inward and outward virtues which ought to be in a complete woman. It's also St. Rose of Lima Day, patron of gardeners and florists. On this day in agricultural history in 1875, William Henry Eccles was born. A British physicist, he pioneered the development of radio communication. He was among the first who suggested that solar radiation accounted for the differences in wave propagation during the day and night. In 1902, Fanny Merritt Farmer opened Miss Farmer's School of Cookery in Boston, Massachusetts. Farmer published her most well-known work, the Boston Cooking School Cookbook, in 1896. She may be best remembered for her work in preparing appealing food for the sick. She understood perhaps better than anyone else of her day that appearance, taste, and presentation of sick room food was far more important than cost and nutritional value. In 1904, Harry Weed was issued a patent for his grip tread for tires, essentially a snow tire chain for automobiles. In 1955, hail fell to a depth of 1 foot in Rushmore, Minnesota. And in 2004, the French Parliament passed a bill to combat obesity among French youth. And that's this day in agricultural history.
University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It is a Friday afternoon. Jim Angel from the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, our state climatologist, now joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. Jim, thanks for being with us. I want to go back and look over the month of August so far. It's been pretty dry in the state. Do you know how dry?
Yes. You know, if you look at the numbers across the state right now, the statewide average is 0.9 inches. That is about a fourth of what we normally get in August. The long-term average is 3.6 inches. So very dry. In fact, it's on track to be one of our driest if it doesn't start raining anytime soon. I think the driest was back in 1953 with just a little over an inch. So we're kind of in that ballpark of seeing numbers like that. You know, we had some rain last night, but it was pretty scattered and mostly confined to the northern third of the state. So that'll push it, the average a little higher, but it's, by and large, it's still very dry out there.
It won't push it very much higher, right? At this point, it still looks like a record breaker as number one?
Yeah. Well, yes, it looks like it could still be a record breaker. And if we look at the long-term forecast, it doesn't look any better. I looked out the 7 days, and the precipitation amounts that they're forecasting for Illinois are very modest, like a tenth of an inch or less. So there's just not much going on out there the next week or so as far as precipitation goes.
Evaporative rates might be pretty high. We're going to go into the 90s next week.
That's right. That's the other side of the story. You know, all summer we've kind of been lucky in that it has been dry, but it has not been as hot as last year. You know, we're already up in the 90s and into the lower 100s at this point, but this year that kind of cut us a break, at least temporarily, to be cooler. But now the heat is coming in, so we might start seeing some deterioration in the corn and soybean crop because of that.
What else can you tell me about the weather forecast? What do those temperatures look like over the next 4 or 5 days?
Yes, if you look at the temperatures, it's going to kind of a slow and steady march over the weekend. You know, it's going to be highs in this area around in the upper 80s by the time we get into Sunday, and low 90s by Monday. And by midweek, around Wednesday, it'll probably be the hottest day of the week, 95 degrees for high, but probably more telling to me is the fact that the lows are going to be in the low 70s. That means we're going to have a lot of humidity along with the heat as well. So it's not cooling off at night, and it's going to be very warm during the daytime.
Oh, that's just fantastic. I love it.
Yeah, this is time for the Farm Progress Show.
You betcha. Hey, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon. Don't forget, we will be at Farm Progress Show all 3 days next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of the show, that is. You can come out and see us. I'll be live from the show site on the radio during the 2 o'clock hour with the Closing Market Report. Orion Samuelson will join us in the University of Illinois tent as well. That's located at the
the corner of 3rd and West Avenue. And you can come see him between the 10:30 and 11:30 hour. I sure do hope that you make it over to the Farm Progress Show and visit us there at the University of Illinois. 10 again, we're at 3rd and West. That's just about 3 blocks to the south of the main gate. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Chip Flory will be our guest on Commodity Week. We'll record that at 4:30 this afternoon.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.